Good morning. You are tuned in to Community Radio, listener-supported KGNU. I'm Maeve Conran, and coming up on today's Morning Magazine, we'll hear from a research associate at the University of Colorado in Boulder who has written to the regents at CU expressing her dismay about how her promotion case has been handled. She says that despite being supported by her colleagues in her department and the head of her department, efforts to gain tenure have consistently been blocked by administration, and she says this is part of a pattern facing people of colour at the university. After that, we'll hear from a community conversation on climate justice that took place last Thursday in Boulder. It was the culmination of a year-long partnership with FLOWS, that's the Foundation for Leaders Organising for Water and Sustainability. It was a conversation elevating the voices of people who've often been excluded from conversations and solutions on the climate crisis. We'll hear an excerpt this morning. Then on Resistance Radio, we'll hear from a local high school student who 2 years ago set up a website called the Me Too Teen Project. It's to give space to young people who are dealing with their own issues around sexual assault and sexual harassment. After headlines from the BBC, we'll get a commentary from Jim Hightower. Then we'll take a look at the death penalty in Colorado, as Colorado is on the brink of abolishing capital punishment. We'll hear from one of the leading voices in the efforts to abolish the death penalty in the state of Colorado on how historic this year's legislative session is. At 9 o'clock, it is media analysis from Counterspin, rounding out this morning's news on public affairs. But first, we'll begin with the latest local headlines. Here's Jamie Sidler.
Denver Water has taken the fight over the proposed expansion of Gross Reservoir to the Colorado Court of Appeals. The agency filed an appeal on Friday of a judge's decision that the project must go through the county's review process. The Daily Camera reports that the expansion of Gross Reservoir would be the largest construction project in Boulder County history, raising the dam by more than 130 feet. While the reservoir is entirely within Boulder County, Denver Water serves no customers there. The legal dispute between Boulder County and Denver Water started last March when the county commissioners affirmed their right to review the project through what is called a 1041 process, in which local governments can regulate matters of statewide interest through local permitting. Denver Water then sued the county, but District Judge Andrew McDonald ruled that the commissioners did not exceed their jurisdiction. Now the Court of Appeals will decide whether the judge was correct. A spokesman for Denver Water said that the project is vital to developing a more secure and reliable supply for its 1.4 million customers. But the project also faces a lawsuit filed by the advocacy group Save the Colorado, which is challenging a permit for it issued by the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers. A hearing will be held in Denver tomorrow to consider the Trump administration's plans to revise the country's most fundamental environmental law. The National Environmental Protection Policy Act, or NEPA, has been in place for 50 years. It has been described as the Magna Carta of environmental law. NEPA has required any major development project involving the federal government, whether through funding or federal property, to be evaluated through an environmental impact study. Thousands of projects go through the permitting process each year. Now, as the Denver Post reports, the White House, supported by the fossil fuel industry and the U.S. Chamber of Commerce, is moving ahead with a revamp of how NEPA reviews are done. Proposed changes would reduce the types of projects and impacts that require an environmental review. Notably, the revisions would remove the requirement that climate change be part of the analysis. The revisions have attracted widespread criticism from, among others, U.S. Representative Diana DeGette, Democrat of Denver, the National Wildlife Federation, Western Watersheds Project, and the Western Environmental Law Center. The first of only two public hearings in the country on the NEPA revisions will be held on Tuesday at the Environmental Protection Agency's regional headquarters in Denver. Starting this week, ballots for the presidential primary will be mailed out. Henry Schuyler has more.
The 3.9 million registered voters in Colorado will begin receiving their ballots this week for the first presidential primary election in 20 years. Proposition 107 and 108, passed by voters in 2016, changed the presidential nomination process in Colorado to a primary. All registered voters will be able to participate in one party's primary. After the first primary, there will still be a caucus for political parties where down-ballot candidates will be discussed. Those candidates include senators, representatives, as well as state and local lawmakers. Coloradans will have until 7 p.m. on March 3rd to return their primary ballots. This date is commonly known as Super Tuesday, with 10 other states holding their primaries on the same day. Colorado stands as a closely contested state for many Democratic presidential hopefuls. Vermont Senator Bernie Sanders leads in a poll done by Emerson College by 1 point over the former Vice President Joe Biden in Colorado. For KGNU, I'm Henry Schuyler.
About 420 property owners throughout Boulder County could face increased costs due to the remapping of floodplains. Some property owners will face the difficult decision of whether to pay increased flood insurance rates based on a higher risk designation from the Federal Emergency Management Agency's preliminary flood insurance rate maps released last year. The Daily Camera reports that FEMA has said that it will take some time to review potential amendments to the plans due to the complex topography of the county. One homeowner, Jeff Holland, told the Camera that he noticed that all of the work the county did and the 4 Mile Watershed Coalition did to improve resiliency in the canyon was not reflected on FEMA's map. He noted that all the data for the map was collected in 2013 and 2014, but since then there have been changes to stream beds, and also they are wider and elevations have changed. The old data FEMA is using affects his property values. Holland said he will either have to pay nearly $3,000 in flood insurance each year or pay a surveyor around $6,000 to reassess his property and file for an amended designation from FEMA, a process that could take months to a year to finalize. The Boulder City Council will meet with the county commissioners tonight to discuss the potential for a minimum wage increase. It's expected they will also talk about a possible 2020 ballot measure for voters to consider tax hikes to fund transportation, affordable housing, and a new public library district taxing authority. The meeting is open to the public and begins at 5:30 p.m. in the county courthouse at 1325 Pearl Street. In today's weather, there's a good chance of snow this afternoon, which could be heavy at times with a high of about 31. Snow continues tonight with a low around 10. Tomorrow, mostly sunny with the high around 34. Right now, it's about 18 along the Front Range. For KGNU, I'm Jamie Sudler.
It is 11 minutes past 8 o'clock. Lupita Montoya is a researcher associate at the University of Colorado in Boulder in the Environmental Engineering Program. In the last few weeks, back in December, she wrote to the regents at CU because she is concerned about how her promotion case has been handled by the university. She says that despite being supported by her colleagues and her department, and even her department head, the administration at CU have consistently blocked her efforts to gain tenure. She spoke with KGNU's Rosanna Longo about what she says are barriers that are facing not just her, but many people of colour at the university.
It has taken years, and to this day, I have continued to feel that I was discriminated against and mistreated in many, many different ways. I'll just read the statement and then I'll try to add. Maybe before I go on, I'll just mention a little bit about my background, my educational background. I'm an engineer by training. I have a bachelor's degree in engineering mechanics from the State University of California, Northridge campus in Los Angeles area. I graduated with honors from there, and then I went with a full fellowship, Stanford University, to study graduate school, where I obtained a Master's of Science degree in mechanical engineering and also a PhD in environmental engineering. When I graduated from Stanford, I then moved to the Northeast, and I have spent almost about 2 years doing a postdoctoral research at the State University of New York in Albany, public health. That's what I did my work then, working as an engineer. And then I went to Harvard School of Public Health for another 3 years to do additional training, and so in public health. And so I've had a lot of education, all of it meant to address problems of disadvantaged communities in this country and abroad, because I have worked in other countries as well. For the last 10 years, I have been the only underrepresented minority female faculty at the College of Engineering at the CU Boulder campus. In fact, I am the only Latina faculty in the 125-year-plus history of that college. They never had a Latina before me, and they probably may never have one in the future. I am officially rostered in the Civil, Environmental, and Architectural Engineering Department. This is the department that hired me when I came here as a tenure track. I was hired at this department as a tenure track assistant professor starting in January 2010. In 2016, my dossier, that means my files, was evaluated for promotion to associate professor with tenure. My promotion was supported by my department, by my department chair, and by the external reviewers who are experts in my field, in my fields of research, which is aerosol science and indoor air quality. So people who know my research, the people who know it best, were all in favor of my promotion. However, after that, the College of Engineering and Dean Bobby Braun reversed those recommendations for my promotion, which came, like I said, from external reviewers who are experts in my field, my department, and my department chair. Traditionally, those are the most important ones. But in my case, apparently they were not important. And so the dean reversed the recommendation for my promotion. And then my department followed with that reiteration of support for my department in my department chair. In other words, my department took another vote and my chair wrote another letter saying, no, we disagree with you. We want Lupita here. She has earned her promotion. So that was the second time they said this. The college and the dean again denied my tenure after my department said for the second time that they wanted me here. And ultimately, the levels above the College of Engineering decided to follow Dr. Braun's recommendation and deny my promotion. So after all of this process, in 2017, which took about a year to go through that process, I filed a grievance, which is basically an appeal, in a level one investigation into my case followed, which took about a year also. So that's a second year. This level one investigation ended, and a panel concluded that, and I'm quoting, there were aspects of the handling of Dr. Montoya's dossier that has raised concerns, and that there was, in quotations again, sufficient evidence of possible violations of rights and privileges to support a recommendation for either complete reevaluation or mediation. Now, neither the chancellor nor anyone else at CU took steps to address the concerns brought up during the investigation, which took a lot of months. It took about a year to issue the recommendations. And those recommendations were completely ignored by the CU administration. So after the non-response from the Chancellor DiStefano, that was in 2018 now, I requested a level two hearing, which is I'm here literally following procedures that they have written in their own policies, which apparently they're just an ornament because they don't really follow them. So I follow the procedures because I wanted to be, you know, doing things properly. So I requested this level two hearing as I'm entitled under the Region 5H policy, which is what they publish, and it's public domain. That hearing took another 8 months to complete. And in spite of CU admitting that there were violations to procedure in my case, they essentially blamed my department, but I upheld the denial of my tenure. So we went through all these other steps, and then at the end I said, it doesn't matter. Your department should have done something different. So they will not reverse their choice. And in the meanwhile, I continue to enjoy the support of my department and continue to conduct research, to publish, and to graduate students, all while I was under a new denomination. I'm no longer an assistant professor. Now I am a research associate, which my department, you know, has continued to renew. So I have an affiliation with my department because they support my work and they know the quality of my work is real. It's the administration that refuses to accept it. So I approach a number of people about this problem, and it seems that not much is happening because there is a, I think, a concerted effort to hide what really is going on within the university. And so there is more interest in protecting the image of the university than it is to literally be fair and to do the right thing. So in my case, I approach a number of people, including the regents. I did this and I approached them because I believe that I exhausted all procedural avenues at CU that are available to me, yet CU refused to treat me fairly. And since I'm the only underrepresented minority woman in the history of the college to have been that who have ever been evaluated for tenure, I understand that maybe on the surface, I'm a challenge to the system, that they don't know what to do with me. But they have also managed to keep people like me out. You know, and it seems to me that it has been a very deliberate effort to keep me out. And given the ever-present professed values of inclusive excellence at CU Boulder, they plaster this all over the place. I find the mistreatment of my tenure case to be completely opposite of these so-called values of inclusive excellence that they claim to have, and completely against the very best interests of the institution and even our students and our state, because what they've done is not leading to better education for our students and is certainly discriminatory.
That's Lupita Montoya, who's a research associate at CU Boulder. She's in the Environmental Engineering Program and speaking there with KGNU's Rosanna Longo about her efforts to gain tenure at CU. And despite recommendations from her colleagues in her department chair, as well as from external reviewers, she has not been granted tenure. Well, last December, she wrote to the regents at the university about her case, saying she believes she's being discriminated against. Well, KGNU reached out to the university about the case. Last week, we received a statement from CU Boulder, and it said that Dr. Montoya received a fair opportunity to be considered for tenure. Those who considered her case did so fairly and without prejudice. The faculty committee found that any minor procedural flaws in her case did not affect the ultimate determination. Well, we'll continue to follow this case as Dr. Montoya considers other possible actions. And coming up on February 20th, as part of our new monthly series, Trends, in collaboration with the Community Foundation of Boulder County, we're going to take a look at issues facing people of colour in the county, where despite proclamations and goals laid out by various different entities, diversity, or rather a lack of diversity, is still a major issue. So do stay tuned for that. That's coming up on February 20th. Well, last Thursday, KGNU hosted a community conversation on climate justice. It was the culmination of a year-long partnership with FLOWS, that's the Foundation for Leaders Organising for Water and Sustainability. The conversation focused on how to elevate the voices of people who are in low-income housing, people who are immigrants, people in communities where their voices are often not heard when it comes to solutions to the climate crisis. Well, FLOWS provides free water and energy upgrades to low-income Boulder residents. And Michelle Gabrielov Parish with FLOWS told the crowd last Thursday evening how we need to really consider housing and affordability of housing when we are looking at solutions to the climate crisis.
The easiest way to understand it is Boulder has actually looked at, and most big organizations do, different scopes of emissions is what it's called. And basically our largest source of scope 3 emissions is people commuting into Boulder. So I think we have something like 60,000 people that come into town every day to work here. And so you can think about the costs of that in terms of climate. Having people come from Longmont, I live in Superior, I have friends from Westminster, people living in Louisville, Denver, sometimes even farther. So if you think about it, lack of access to affordable housing here is driving up those emissions. So that's the most clear way to see that if we had affordable housing in a place like Boulder, then we could reduce the amount that people are having to commute here really significantly. It would change the game. My husband and I, Ramon, started also a nonprofit, I think in 2002. That isn't there anymore. But our vision was that affordable housing should also be sustainable, and that if you need affordable housing, you're probably someone who needs the most constant, like, energy costs, not something that swings wildly every time that there's a storm, which I think a lot of us have experienced. Like, do you heat your house or do you wear a sweater? And anyway, so another connection is that, you know, the benefits of sustainability in affordable housing are amplified compared to other types of housing having sustainability features. So I think that that's another thing. Passive solar is amazing. So a lot of this stuff does not have to be expensive. Solar panels are expensive. Passive systems are not. There's actually some research that shows that if we just aimed all of our crappy houses in Colorado south towards the sun, we could save 30% on energy costs. So that's another more tangential connection, I think.
It's Michelle Gabriella Parish of Flows. That's the Foundation for Leaders Organizing for Water and Sustainability. It's based at CU Boulder, and she was speaking there last Thursday evening at a community conversation hosted by KGNU on how to elevate the voices of people who are often marginalized in the conversation around solutions to the climate crisis. So she was speaking there on how housing, and particularly affordable housing, needs to be a big part of any discussion on solutions to the climate crisis. Where we're going to play the entire panel this coming Thursday morning at 8:30, and we'll be posting the video online as well. It is 8:25. You're listening to KGNU.
This program is made possible by you, the KGNU listener member, and by Fisk Planetarium on the CU Boulder campus, featuring Voyagers, a theatrical performance offering creative access to science and math through the performing arts. More information at colorado.edu/Fisk or by calling 303-492-5002.
And it's time now for Resistance Radio. Well, 2 years ago, high school student Isabella Grace Cohen set up a website called the Me Too Teen Project. It was in response to the Me Too movement, and it was with a view to giving space to young people who are dealing with sexual assault and sexual harassment.
Not only have I experienced seeing my loved ones and the people that have built me to who I am. I've seen them suffer and break and have their life change forever because of abuse, including sexual abuse. And at the time, I had one of my close friends really get set back by it. And I've had my own mom experienced it and seen how it's affected her, and I've had the person who has been by my side my whole life experience major sexual assault, and I think sadly kind of every woman around me in the world and us has experienced some sort of sexual assault, whether that's minor or major. Yeah,
the Me Too movement really brought it into, I suppose, dominant conversation.
Yeah.
Brought it out into the open, how pervasive sexual harassment and sexual assault is. Mm-hmm. Was this a conversation then that was happening amongst your peers, amongst high school students? Were people starting then to share stories, or had this been a little bit maybe more out in the open amongst teens?
I think that it has come to light in the past 2 years way more than it has, at least among teens, and I think a really large contributor to that was the Kavanaugh case and her hearing. And I think it not only made women not want to come forward, but it also began, or she put in place a situation that even if you're not going to come forward and press charges, it's important to come forward and your peers and in yourself and speak up and out this as soon as possible.
Christine Lindsay Ford, and she testified in the Supreme Court Senate hearings for Kavanaugh. Now, her experience had happened in high school.
Yeah.
And so, I mean, you're in that peer group now in high school, but then we heard from, you know, a woman who carried that with her for decades. And so, obviously, this is something that's so transgenerational.
And that's what kind of brought me to the idea of it, because there were like three or four cases like hers that came out around that time period, and almost all of them were from childhood or high school experiences. And so I wanted to create a space where you can get ahead of the problem, and most sexual assaults are in college and in high school, and basically like college and below are the highest rates for sexual assault. And so creating a space where you can begin the process of ending the abuse cycle and begin acknowledging your truth, to hopefully not have to carry that weight and come out about it like she did so many years later.
Well, last year you had a fundraiser, a homecoming dance to raise funds. You're going to do the same thing this year. I mean, what, you raised over $7,000 last year?
Yeah. This year it's on February 15th, the day after Valentine's Day, at Block 1750. They've donated their space, and sadly I won't be here, but I have an amazing team of people from my school, from Fairview, from New Vista, Boulder High, who have dramatically stepped up to calling people, and a GoFundMe where we've raised almost like $2,000 in the past like week. And the goal of it this year is, it's about consent, and so having like a fun dance that's also based around consent. So the idea that come with your loved ones, like dance with them, kiss them, but like the idea of, it's all about consent and always like checking in with the people you love. Last year was more just like a getting your foot in the door, and it was just like a fun homecoming dance. And we raised $7,000, but this year we're hoping to raise a lot more, and have it be more intentional. And then hopefully I'm gonna have another one in September that's even more just like growing them and making them more precise about what the goal of them is.
That's Isabella Grace Cohen, the founder of the Me Too Teen Project. Find out more at metooteenproject.com. And the funds being raised during this year's dance, which happens February 15th, that's going to go to some local nonprofits helping young people.